So who among you believe that life is really fair? Anybody? Nobody. We're in the same place. Yes, it is not. How about Bible stories? Kind of interesting. This particular story. Twin brothers. But somehow it sounds like their fate have been already decided even before they're born. I mean, how cruel would that be? Your fate is already decided before you're even born. And that's our argument, in a way. So is it the story that we should struggle about it, or should try to understand there may be deeper meaning behind it? If you pay attention to little details, kind of numbers may jump on your eyes, kind of numbers that Bible likes to use. For example, Isaac was married when he was 40. 40. Sounds familiar?
40 days, 40 nights.
Exactly. It begins with actually Noah's Ark story. The rain poured 40 days and 40 nights. Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights.
And Jesus was
in the desert 40 days and 40 nights. He was at 40. He got married. Do we say meaningful or just random number? It cannot be a random number. You probably know that. Now, when he was having two twin brothers, he was 60. Where do you see number 6? First chapter, 6 days it took to create everything. Also, of course, also in the Revelation, number 666 appears as a number of a human, as a bad one, though. But if you really look into number 6, it's not a bad number. It's a good number. Because in 6 days, God created everything, including humans. On the seventh day, God rested. So, this is how Swedenborg tried to understand the Bible in a way. Each name, each number, each occasion, each relation, even the place it is taking, the story is taking place, may have meaning. Not about any random meaning, but something that is related to our spiritual journey. In this particular case, has connection with God's promise to Abraham, saying, I'll give you many descendants. How many? As many as the stars in the sky. How many sons did he have? One. One son. His son Isaac gave birth to how many sons?
Two.
Two. But one of them will become very important. Which one?
Jacob.
Exactly. And his name becomes Israel. From where the Israelites come. And Jacob will have how many sons and daughters? 12 sons and one daughter.
That we know about.
That we know about, of course. And he has 4 wives. Not that he intended. You can read the story, and he didn't really intend to have 4 wives. He wanted to have 1 wife. But somehow was given to him 4 wives. That's where Mormon church and also Islamic practice of having 4 wives are justified. Interesting? So Jacob was born from the father who is 60. Why is it important? He's married at 40. And it takes 20 years to have 2 sons. In a very simple way, there's a promise that was given to Abraham that is now about to be really something real. If you're having only 1 son, how long will it take to have descendants as as many as stars in the sky. It'll never happen if your children are only having one son. But how about one of them happens to have 12 sons? Suddenly it becomes 12 times more. If 12 of them have two sons each and multiplies, then it takes, actually it's possible within 400 years, you may have 4 or 5 million descendants from your own family. I mean, not that that's how it happened. So the promise was given to Abraham. It's about to be actualized. Something that we intend to do, we wanted to do, we wish to do, we think about it, that's Isaac. Intention is Abraham. Your willingness, your acknowledgement, you perceive something in your heart, in your soul, in your spirit, you want it to do. But you need to find a way to do it. So you need to think about it. So you're thinking about it is Isaac. That's why Isaac's very quiet. If you read the Genesis, how many episodes of stories do you read about Isaac? Two. That's it. Actually, three. But one's very brief. He's kind of coming out and seeing Rebecca coming in, then that's it. And then he's married, then he has children. The two sons who are born, these are our first trial, understanding, real, making things real in the real life. And it takes this dual kind of conflict. One, you really want to do it. Two, you don't want to do it. One, you believe it, this is the right thing to do. Two, you want to run away from it. So, story goes that if you would agree with me that it's unfair, their destiny have been already decided before their birth, that the elder will serve the younger. Now, if you read the actual story, it's not how it happened. Even though Jacob was cunning enough to take away the birthright and all those things from blessing of father from his elder brother, Esau, but he had to run away from his home empty-handed. And he had to serve his uncle for 21 years. First 14 years to have two wives. And one of them he didn't intend to have. You know the famous story. He was kind of tricked. Another 7 years to gain something. So 14 years of service, he didn't own anything. He was almost like a servant to his uncle. Of course, in the last 7 years, he was so much blessed that what he owned was much more than his uncle. His uncle's servants got jealous of him, and they couldn't stay together. So he literally ran away from his uncle again. And then when he's returning back to home, he was so afraid of his brother that he would kind of like put different companies of wives and children in the lines, and he would stay in the last and see how his brother will act on him. So, would you like to have that kind of life? Or Esau stayed home, happy with his parent, did what he loved to do, he had wives, and no drama. Which life do you think is happier? Yes. So, now, to whom shall we say it's unfair? Right? Interesting, isn't it? So, Bible stories, according to Freedom Book, is about our journey. What kind of journey is that we're taking? And in a very simple way, kind of, we may have three different identities or images that we pursue, we embody. First one is something that's given to you. Like right now, I'm giving an identity to my children, actually. I tell my daughter, "You're so lovely." She believes, "Oh, I'm lovely." My dad tells me so. "You're so smart." "I'm smart." "Okay, I'm smart." It's true. It is true that your parent gives you love and encouragement and tells you who you are. And to a degree, of course, they have doubts. "I'm not that smart, but maybe I'm smart. Not that smart." But there is this image that is almost given to you by your parents, by your teachers, by your peers, by the world that you live in. People make opinion about you and give you some advice and tells you who you are. Those are all the images that is given to you. And that starts as young as probably 4 or 5. And sometimes it lasts as old as until you pass away. To a degree, we'll never get rid of it all. Because we are always somehow concerned about how other people think about me. Right? So that's given image by others. And there is an image that you create about yourself. May begin as young as 18, as old as 50, or older, that you somehow have your own self-awareness that my dad think I'm super smart, probably I'm not that smart, maybe I'm average, a little over average. Maybe I don't think I can do all that, maybe I can do this. So you have your own self-image, or I like red, not the blue. I like blues, not the zazz. These are also your choice. You choose certain things actually based on what we believe to be true or what I believe to be true and also what pleases me. So these are self-selected. And in whole, it creates an image for us that is kind of self-created image, which is very strong one, and any offense toward it, you will feel very offended because your world is challenged. And this is called self-image that is the ultimate enemy for your enlightenment in Buddhist tradition. Now, there is the true image. This is odd one, though. Somehow you have to find it. That's what you truly are. But you really have to work hard to find it. And how do you find it? That's where the mystery begins. That's where it's about regeneration, enlightenment, all these things are basically about that. How do I find my true image? In a way, given kind of finding given image and separating yourself and identifying yourself as your own image, that's not that hard. You could do it. But how about finding your true image, your true self? So that's where kind of this occasion comes in, the Luke. And this day, well, Simon Peter and his friends worked all night. They caught nothing. So they put the boat on the shore and kind of resting. This random guy jumped into the boat saying, "Take me." Like, okay, they took him. But then he's talking about the word of God. They're probably looking at him like, "What is he doing?" And then after that, he's saying, "Okay, let's go catch some fish in the morning." And they said they worked all night. They didn't catch anything. Right? They're fishermen. And this guy is obviously not a fisherman. But he's saying, "Let's go catch some fish." Almost 99.9% of time, if you are Peter, Simon, you'll say, "No. I'm the fisherman. I'm born here. That's all that I did in my entire life. Who are you telling me that we can catch fish now?" That would be our usual reaction. But somehow, in here, Simon Peter does something very, very interesting. "Master, we have worked all night long but have caught nothing. Yet, If you say so, I'll let down the net. It sounds simple and easy, but it is not. If you look deeply inside it, he's going against probably his own egotistic mind that what kind of man is this that telling me what to do? And you know that Jesus was not a fisherman. His background could have been carpenter, but not a fisherman. You know how you can distinguish who's fisherman or not? You don't smell fish. If you're a fisherman, you smell like fish. It's true. We're talking about ancient days. They don't have soaps. They don't have hot shower. If you're a fisherman, you smell like fish. Simple thing. So they didn't see this man. They don't know who that is. He talked something words very with authority. Now he's saying, let's go fishing. And somehow he's saying, okay, if you say so, I'll do it one more time. That, I'll do it one more time. That's the hardest part. That's where we call something like faith comes in.
I'll try again.
Exactly. Even if with all my understanding, with all my experiences, it's not going to work out. But somehow you are telling me I'll do it one more time. Then, you know the rest of the story. They caught fish, so many. They were sharing with another boat, and both of them are sinking. It's a miracle. If you ever gone fishing, you know it's a miracle. You can't catch fish like that. It's impossible. So, there is this Bible story that tells us about, so there's something so hard to do, yet there's this moment, there are these opportunities that God visits us in a random cases and illuminates our mind with the truth that will help us. And at that moment, instead of listening to our own ego saying, you know better, you have done it, it's not going to work out, you listen to that truth, to voice, and you do it one more time, that could make your life entirely different. After this moment, Simon Peter became the disciple. And you know Simon Peter. He still remembered. He's not a fisherman anymore. And yeah, he became actually the fisherman of humans. And how many people he caught? Well, quite many. So may God bless you all in this journey and being aware and being awake at this moment of God's entrance into your life. May God bless you and strengthen your mind to choose something that is right and true to you.